Welcome to the road to growth, success of an entrepreneur.
We've raised the bar.
Learn firsthand from successful business owners and create your own path to success.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
It's time to hit the road to growth with team lead of the Enriquez Group, Realtor Vinny.
Quite an intro. I like that.
Hey, try to get it pumped up. I know it's nothing to the degree that you're putting out there or your people are putting out there, but trying to give a little spark to the podcast.
No, I love that. It got me hyped. So it worked.
There we go. A bare synopsis of what does Neon 16 do, and what's your role there?
Yeah, so this is my 21st year in the entertainment industry. I've been blessed enough to have quite a long career and a lot of success. But 4 years ago, I landed in Miami and I started to see what was happening in Latin music. Right? It was very early on, nowhere near what it is today, where we control and are the fastest growing genre in the business. But at that point, it was still baby steps in. And I found myself with an opportunity to create a business that would become the flag of the culture. And what I meant by that was a business that was centered around music, but really became the basis for, a cultural movement that was happening within Latin culture and Latin music. And so, that became a really successful music company, both management, publishing, and label. And then that developed into multiple businesses that essentially have now derived into film and television, with Entertain Studios, into our own agency with AM16, into our investment fund. So now it's a ecosystem of four companies that are really active in changing culture and really impacting culture through what we create in art. So, and I'm the CEO. So now I run that amongst other amazing things we do within the business. But at heart, I'm a creative. I think I got into business because I didn't have a business person to represent my creative. And that's kind of what has led me to all my success.
What was your creative originally?
I was a music producer. So I started, producing records and really wanted to be behind the scenes because I love the creating part of it. I wanted to be an architect growing up. So the concept of building something and putting it out and then kind of moving on to the next project was really exciting to me as a producer. And then at that time when I started, there just wasn't a lot of managers for music producers. So I became my own manager and then decided that I'm actually really good at both. I'm really good at creative and really good at strategy and business growth. So I started to go down both of those paths and build my career from that.
When you originally started, were you like embracing the Latin scene, or was it more just like beats, or what did that look like?
No, originally I was in hip hop. Originally, I love hip hop. I'm a kid that, even though I'm Colombian, I grew up in Miami. And so hip hop for me was a big thing. So originally I just wanted to make hip hop and then that turned into, success in hip hop, success in pop music, leading multiple major corporations. And then Latin just happened to come because I happened to be in Miami at the right time, at the right place. And I started to see what was bubbling and I knew how to identify that opportunity. And so I spent the last 4 years, fully going into Latin. But originally my career comes from the general market. And that's truly what allowed me to be successful in Latin as well, because I've been able to bring something that no one else in this market had experience with.
What's the, perception from like investors in the Latin scene? I mean, I saw that, what's that one documentary about Cheetos, the hot Cheetos that came out, right? And they started embracing the Latin culture. What's it like in the music scene when you originally started?
I mean, when we originally started, nobody was touching it, right? It was a genre that, had market share. And so the major labels have Latin divisions that play within that space. But it wasn't this global music. Like, we weren't getting Coachella and we weren't getting, the American Grammys and all these different things, or the big campaigns with, or the covers of Time Magazine like Bad Bunny just did. So now it's different. Now, everybody wants to be in the Latin business some way, somehow, because it's the fastest growing demo in the States. We're loyal consumers. We have money to spend as well. So now more than ever, you see brands and you see corporations as well as investment funds and really investing in this market.
So when you started in the space, what were you in managing before you got into like kind of like the Neon 16, or was it just like self-managing yourself and then kind of bringing on other artists with you, or how did that look?
No, so I started my career as a producer, then got an opportunity to work with a bunch of really big artists, and then became an executive. So I launched my company about 12 years ago, a company called 1916, where we represented a bunch of different producer songwriters and artists, and did a lot of music for television, sold that business, and then became the co-chair at Universal Canada, and then became the executive vice president for Roc Nation, for Jay-Z's company. And so I ended my corporate career, as you could say, in at Roc Nation, then created Neon 16 after that. But I've owned businesses, whether it's publishing business or record labels or management companies, all throughout my career, and have always just been able to build them and sell them. And then I would say 5 years ago, I spent about a total of 6 years running major corporations as the head of the company, and then now again back to that entrepreneurial spirit and building this business.
Is there a you talked about kind of managing a lot of these spaces and kind of having guidance of like these big corporations. I mean, were there key takeaways from those corporations that you try to implement in your company now that you feel like make it successful?
Yeah, I mean, I think two very important ones. One is structure. Right, like infrastructure and foundation of a business is so important. You know, you see this happening so many times. Most entrepreneurs, even when they have a business or a product that is successful, their back-end infrastructure is a mess. Their financial part is a mess, and that part of it, you know, is one of the takeaways that I really took. Is I some of these corporations, as big as they are, they have a lot of cracks in their infrastructure. And two, culture. Right, I think culture is very important, especially once you start getting really big. Once you get over, I think, 30 employees, you know, it's hard to keep the culture because you have to create a real corporate structure and rules. But we've been really, really successful, especially in this new venture, at keeping a really healthy culture, an exciting culture for the team members, while having an insane amount of infrastructure and procedure that has allowed us to operate and allows us to scale really fast. I mean, we build the business to where it is today, you know, with four different highly successful verticals, with, you know, spending a lot of money on infrastructure and making sure that is kind of was our foundation. And then really building a culture of like what I call the serving leaders, you know, having a great team of leaders who understand how to build talent, understand how to, you know, create teamwork, how to create excitement for people to come in. And I always say for me, it's always about, how do I help that person reach their dream as they work and build the company that we're building, right? And so that also allows people to feel like there's a lot of range within what they're doing in the business. They're not stuck to like, this is my 9-to-5, but they really treat it as, this is my passion project and I have an opportunity to be something great.
For the managers and the team that you bring on, is there... do they need to be creatives, or in the past, at least be creative to be good at their job? Does that play a factor at all?
Yeah. I mean, I think even for our CFO, right? Like you want someone who's passionate, but who understands the opportunity, right? Like who asks the why. I think that's very important. That curiosity of how we can reshape or relook at a problem is very important, because at the end of the day, senior management team, so anyone in the C class, anyone in the EVP class, those executives, are you're paying them to solve problems and to be creative in doing them, because I think that's the hardest part for a leader to do. Is everything's fun when everybody knows their job and everything's working fine, but the moment a problem arises, can you attack that problem really quickly? Can you change infrastructure fast enough, or can you maneuver your personnel in a way where you end kind of the normal corporate BS, right? Because once you have a lot of employees, there's always some complaint, or this person doesn't like this, or, you know, they get into the emotional part of it, and you have to be very good at being creative to solve intercompany problems, personal problems, and external issues that you might face with, you know, the natural course of business. So I always ask, you know, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I ask that to people who are already adults, but I think it's a good example of like, where's their drive, right? Like there's people that just look at their job as, oh, this is just a 9-to-5. I'm trying to make some money. That's it. And then there's people that say, hey, I want to eat the world. And you want to hire people who want to eat the world, because that makes them really creative. That makes them very driven people who are willing to go through whatever, who will work late nights to pull the project off, and who are excited about it because they want to accomplish bigger things.
What's that balancing act of, I guess, having them grow, but them having them also stay with their company and, I guess, have your company big enough to support their, basically, I guess, aspirations?
Well, look, I always tell everybody I hire that at the end of the road, two things are going to happen. I'm either going to have to pay them the millions of dollars they want to get paid, or they're going to go run another company. And I'm okay with that, because I think if that doesn't happen, then either they failed me or I failed them. Mm-hmm. The job of a leader is really to build people. And if you create the right environment, that person would have earned what they end up asking you for at one point, you know, and they have earned it by really creating revenue for your business. And if not, if that person goes and, you know, is able to get a job as a CEO somewhere else, you should encourage that, because it's just your network. Now you have another person at another company who's at a high level who you could talk to. But that means you did your job. That means you trained them enough to get to that point. And most of the time, in my experience, people will stay because you've given them enough room to expand, enough room to feel like there's a way up and not feel like I'm never going to be as good as Lex, or I'm never going to be the CEO of this company. And to me, that's not the course. I mean, the goal is that one of my people become really great and become the CEO of the company, and I could become the chairman. And then one day just sit on the board and let everybody else run the company. So we do a really great job, again, at empowering our team to grow, to build, to think bigger. And we've been blessed enough that, you know, our senior team feels really excited, as well as our junior team and our interns, you know, feel really excited about working at our company.
In building your brand and building your company, I mean, looking back at it, what do you see as like the biggest hiccup that you've kind of had to go through?
I mean, I think any entrepreneur, the first mistake you make is that you try to overcompensate for your weakness, right? So you try to say, like in my case, for example, I've been very good at being creative. I know how to build businesses and get people behind an idea that I have. But I'm not a huge number guy. I'm not a CFO procedure. Like, I'm a creative, you know? So usually creatives don't have a lot of structure and procedure. And so for many years, I think in any of the business that I built, it was that lack of finding that right person and that right rhythm. And so now in this company, we have it, you know, we brought on an incredible COO, an incredible CFO that are really great at doing those things. And I always say, instead of trying to overcompensate for your weakness, focus on what you're amazing on and go find someone who's amazing at your weakness. And so I think the faster you do that, the faster you'll have your business grow. Because again, it's a bad habit that we've been taught of, even with athletes, like go compensate for your weakness. You got to be a well-rounded athlete. Like, that's a mistake. Like, life in the universe or God gave you one gift, one talent that you're better than everybody else at. Go do that and go find people who are incredible at the other things. And that will allow you to explode a lot quicker, because the learning curve to overcompensate a weakness is long.
And you talked about kind of the CFO, the CEO, right? COO. If you're trying to find these entities in your company, and what have you done, I guess, in finding those entities in your company? Has it been you have kind of like a database of individuals you've met over the years? Are you basically getting a headhunter involved, or what does that look like?
Honestly, I've been blessed enough that whenever I said I needed a certain position, I just started looking and talking to people and meeting them. And I'm huge about that interpersonal connection with someone. So, you know, even though we've used a headhunter before, the results haven't been what we wanted, because, you know, they're checking off all these attributes or things that they have in their resume, but it doesn't talk about the person and what they actually do. And you'll find in a lot of corporations, especially in entertainment, that you'll have someone with a high level title, but who's really not that good, who just gotten really lucky, you know, who's been at the right time at the right place, and the right artist happened to walk in. But it's not like they know how to develop an artist. It just, they got an artist who already had their whole idea, and they just happen to be in a position to cut them a bigger check than the next person. So then they come with that credit and they say, oh, I've signed, I don't know, so-and-so. And most companies are like, oh, that must be amazing. But when you really dig, you're like, oh, this guy just likes to sit back and, you know, pretend he does his job. So for me, it's really been about finding people and really just building real relationships. Like, our CFO it's a perfect example of that. He happens to be someone who our head of investment was friends with, and he would just send, anytime we would get an investment, that he would send it for a friendly opinion. And then my head of investment would send me this person's opinion, and I was like, his rationality, how he looked at numbers, how he looked at the investment, like, made total sense to me. And so when the opportunity came, you know, I went up to meet him. He was from Toronto, and he just had all the right things I was looking for: the drive, the dedication, the way he looked at it, the way he wanted to work. Like, he, you know, he went and learned royalty accounting in a weekend, which is something most people don't know in the music industry 30 years after. So those kind of things were like, okay, this is the perfect person. Whatever it takes, we need to get him. And so that kind of drive is what I look for when you know, building a team.
And going back to, I guess, the culture, right? I guess there's two senses of culture, right? The culture of probably like freedom to grow, but also the culture aspect of being Latin, I guess, right? How do you intertwine that? Do you have to be, I guess, of Latin descent or be in the Latin culture to be part of the company? Or is it just kind of being aware of like that Latin community to understand it? Or what does that kind of really look like?
No, I mean, you know, I don't think you have to be of Latin descent. We have multiple people that are not within Latin descent, but their specific job positions, they understand the overall culture of pop culture and urban culture, and they understand, you know, youth culture. So they have a lot of attributes that serve what our mission statement is, and what, you know, we're in entertainment. So at the end of the day, it's important for you to understand what moves the youth, whether that's in the US or Latin America. But yeah, I mean, we, for the most part, we like to bring on people that understand the mission and they could relate to it, because they're the demo that we're talking to, right? They understand when we talk about, you know, family unit, their family unit, they can relate to that nuances about Latino family units. And so depending the role, again, we have multiple people that are not of Latin descent. We have multiple people that don't speak Spanish at the company, but it all depends on what their role is and how they play on that. But again, it's finding the right rhythm and finding the right person. I think sometimes is not so much about the background as it is their understanding of the human emotion.
So understanding like the human emotion, I mean, how do you understand, I guess, your demographic? But I guess technology is probably a lot easier these days to understand it. And is there things that you do to better understand your demographic?
I always say, I mean, obviously we use a lot of technology and we test a lot of things, but I would always say, you know, look at yourself in the mirror, and you tend to be a really good marker for how things move, right? Let's always tell my team, if you would never, like, if you don't share this Instagram post, if you would have seen it randomly and you didn't work at the company and we posted this podcast, yeah, and if you're not wanting to share it, that means that nobody else is going to share it. So, you know, what are you doing to make sure that the clip we cut from this podcast is so impactful that you would want to share it if you randomly scrolled by it? And mm-hmm. That's really the marker of how we look at these things. There's understandings of our culture. There's things like, again, family unit, aspirations. There's kind of these key points we look when building a demo breakdown. But then it comes down to still gut. Like, you know, can you look in the mirror and say, hey, I love this product, I would really buy this product? And so we have a pretty diverse group when we're going to release a project, and we talk about this and we get different opinions, because it's all POV. But it's important to understand that usually the problem most entrepreneurs have when launching a product is they try to think about the masses. Mm-hmm. And the reality is the masses always end up following a niche market. So you have to like think more niche. Like, the more think about, like, if, I don't know, if I target people who wear, you know, Chuck Taylors, and it's just a little community of people, like, but you speak to that community over and over and over and over, what's going to happen is you create a movement. And then the people outside are like, wait a second, I want to be a part of that community. They're cool. And then they get Chucks, and they start, and then that community expands. And that's really how you build an artist. Anytime you try to go for this massive, like, over the top pop hit that everyone's going to like because it's super corny, it never works. It's usually the really key niche market. You talk to a demo, and then that demo continues to grow because people want to be a part of that artist or that coolness that that niche group has.
Is there, I mean, I'm assuming there is, and I'm guessing it's more about what it is, right? But let's say, for example, an artist, right? The demographic that they're singing. Let's say you get a new artist and you're like, this person has a beat to them. They have like a skill set right here. I'm not really sure the demographic that's like going to fall in love with it. Is it just basically trial and error of who's taking in their music, or what does it look like?
So there's a difference between talent and an artist, right? Okay. A lot of people can sing and rap and, you know, play instruments. That doesn't make them an artist, right? An artist is someone who just really understands that demo. They understand their message and what they're saying to you. So when you look at an artist, we'll talk about Taylor Swift, right? So you look at Taylor Swift from the beginning, her artistry was about she's the girl next door. Like all the music was this, especially those early albums, was this girl that still falls in love but doesn't know what love is. And it's the girl next door that, you know, you want to take to your mom, but, you know, she'll also break your heart. And so she started building this homegrown fan base of like girls that say, wait, I can relate to that. That's my life. That's my story. She wasn't trying to make Rihanna music or Katy Perry music. She was making this, again, girl next door music. And that really allowed her to say, okay, that's the target. These little girls or that are going through their first crush, that's my target. And as you grew and as she started to become older, they grew with her. And her audience then became this massive audience that really now talks to the overall female experience. And so that's how you do with any artist. Like a real artist just has an understanding of what they're doing. The Weeknd, for example, who is the number one artist on Spotify, there's not one song on The Weeknd's album that's not based on drugs. But you don't know that. You know, Blinding Lights or I Can't Feel My Face When I'm With You, he's not talking about a girl. You know, but that's his demo. You know, EXO was a crew of artists and producers and really party promoters, cool kids from Toronto that used to throw a party called EXO. And that became the notion of the story of The Weeknd. So the first three albums was, it's till now, it's all like drug related music, but in a pop way where you, as a listener, you don't think that right away. But if you look at the videos, look at how he reinvents himself. So you build fans. He's had fans since the beginning that just, you could play his music when you're in that environment. And that was the niche. And then that niche grew as he started to expand collaborations and, you know, creating records like I Can't Feel My Face or Blinding Lights, where you normally, as an audience, don't understand he's talking about drugs because the song is just an amazing pop record. But that's over. I could give you 100 examples of that. It's just a real artist understands the message, and then you build the audience off that.
So when you're looking for people to join the Neon 16 brand, I guess, is it more about they have to necessarily be an artist, even if they have a good skill set, right, that you really like, you want to know that they're actually an artist to actually bring them on?
Yeah, for sure. Especially nowadays. I think, you know, 15 years ago, you could develop an artist just from a talent and give them direction. But nowadays, you know, the audience reads through that so quickly. So you need someone who knows how to speak to a demo and already has some sort of following, some sort of, you know, narrative to his storyline that people really love. And then you sign them. If not, you're going to have a hard road up because it's really hard to break an artist in today's music industry.
If let's say an artist was listening, right, and they're thinking about creative thinking about becoming an artist, is there kind of like nuggets that they should really take in to figure out what kind of demographic they're going to be focusing on? Or is there like a,
yeah, I mean, I think you got to, again, look in the mirror, like stop trying to be everything that everybody else is and just sit in the mirror, put a journal in front and try to think of like, what things do I like? Okay. I like playing video games. So I'm going to make sure that I speak to people that like playing video games. What else do I like? Well, I'm not really a party person. I like to be home, you know, and I like to hang out with my friends playing sports. So I'm going to talk to that demo. Like, what kind of music would I want to hear when I'm home, you know, chilling, hanging out? Like, or to the contrary, maybe I'm a party animal. So everything I'm going to talk about is being in the club, popping bottles, because that's my life and I can sell that life. So I think it's just looking in the mirror is the best. Again, you're always going to be your best fan. And if you can figure out what would you do and how do you create things that you would love to consume, then you're going to find other people that like the same thing, because your friends, you usually hang out with people who talk about the same things as you, who are into the same things as you. So that tends to be the best you know, model to build an audience. It's just look in the mirror.
If we were talking in 5 years from now, where you see basically your brand going, maybe the Latin community going, I guess, in mainstream media or mainstream, yeah, I guess media would be next 5 years.
I mean, I would say, you know, the goal here is to build a $1 billion media company that really impacts culture. And what I mean by that is that it changes the narrative and the perception of Latino content and creativity within media. Right. I think there's obviously you see the tons of articles of big Latino actors coming out and saying, hey, you know, this is we don't get enough representation. We don't get the chances that, you know, other communities get. And so for me on the film and TV side, or even in the music side and in the ad space, is that is like, let's create a business that's really changing the narrative and the perception of how we look at, you know, Latin creatives, Latin businessmen, like, you know, how we position and create opportunities for entrepreneurs who want to build in and out of the entertainment business. And to me, media still controls and moves the masses in a way that no other business does. And so that's the goal in 5 years.
Yeah, I think most TV shows or movies that are Latin based are probably drug related, unless it's like George Lopez, I think the show.
Yeah, it's the truth.
Well, thank you so much, Lex, for being on the podcast. If someone's listening and they're looking to get more information about you, your company, what's the best way of doing it?
My name is literally every single social handle. So at Lex Barrero, you can find it there, at Neon16. And you know, those two pages will lead you to the rest of our businesses and things that we're doing. But and I'm always around, you know. I love people to always come up and ask questions. I'm really open and really always willing to answer and encourage and inspire.
I'm going to just one last question. If someone's looking at getting management, right, what should they be looking for in finding the right fit for them?
I mean, it depends the needs and the kind of person that you are, but I think you ultimately want somebody who understands, you know, strategy and the chess move of the entertainment industry. Like you need someone who can think three steps ahead, because every movie should have a reaction and a reaction and a reaction. Like, if you know, that's marketing 101. And so you definitely want somebody who has that, but you also want somebody who's super passionate about you and believes in you. And sometimes, you know, those are the best managers, because at the beginning you're not making money, you know? So you need someone who's willing to give you their time and hustle with you and find a way, but also that understands at least the dynamic of where you're going and who you're trying to reach, so that they can guide you properly and not a wrong decision based on money.
So is it really mostly word of mouth trying to find those people?
No, I mean, there's huge managers. I think you can find most managers by just Googling, like, who manages so-and-so, right? And you could reach out to them. They all have social media. They're always around. But you'll be surprised. Most of the artists that break in the music industry, they ultimately break with their close friend or young manager that really just understood how to get to an audience, you know? And so I think you don't have to look to find the biggest manager to be successful. You just got to find a manager that understands your music and how to get it to the people. And in that process, you know, the big manager will find you and the labels will find you and everyone will come to you. And then you could decide if you need a partner or not. But there's tons of artists that are still till this day with their young manager who they just got into the business with, who had no experience.
Again, appreciate so much, Lex, for being here. Hopefully everyone listening got some great nuggets. Please subscribe, please share, go in the show notes, go to the website, or just follow Lex. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to The Road to Growth, Success of an Entrepreneur. Please like, subscribe, and stay connected. Visit www.theenriquezgroup.com.
Yeah, I created a website.
Hope to see you again next week. The Enriquez Group, signing off.